But first, let's begin our exploration of boredom with the philosophy of boredom. It's the title of a book by Lars Svensson. Svensson teaches philosophy at the University of Bergen in Norway. He told Anne Strangechamps that boredom has a long, long history.
I think that some varieties of boredom have been around as long as there has been men on this earth. If you, for instance, read the Ecclesiastes, it starts with everything is emptiness or vanity, depending on the translation. Then you can read Seneca, the Roman philosopher, writes about the tedium vita, the tiredness of life. But a striking thing is that up until about the late 18th century, boredom seemed to be a pretty marginal phenomenon, reserved for priests, nobility, and so on. And what happened was that boredom was democratized. Suddenly it became available to all of us. And that's around the same time that boredom also stopped being a status symbol. I mean, before that, one could actually brag about being bored. But as boredom became available to the masses as well, it was no longer much to brag about.
So when did this happen? When was the word boredom actually coined?
The English word boredom is found at the earliest in the 1760s. The German Langeweile is from approximately the same time. Actually, the Norwegian kjedsomhet is a little bit earlier, so maybe we started getting really bored a little bit earlier. It's very striking that all these words for boredom in different languages pop up at approximately the same time. There's definitely been some sort of major cultural shift around that
time. What was happening then?
There are lots of economic changes. You get a middle class starts to develop. Religion no longer has as much of a grip on people. And of course, religion is a tremendously important source of meaning. So I think there are lots of different cultural changes that come together and produce boredom. And of course, the emergence of individuality is a very, very important development here.
Wasn't this also about the time that the very, very first beginnings of the Industrial Revolution were coming about, the invention of the steam engine, the spinning jenny? Does that have something to do with our discovery of boredom or the spread of boredom?
I think so. Of course, if I should go a little bit Marxist here, I mean, one could use a word such as alienation, people becoming alienated from work and so on. But I actually think that the emergence of individualism is much more important, because what happens then is that all these former collective sources of meaning, I mean, they get diminished in importance. And then each one of us has to find some sort of meaning for ourselves. And that's pretty tricky. So I think that's probably the main explanation for the emergence of the really deep existential form of boredom that's actually pretty closely related to depression.
You know, I realize we've been talking about boredom and assuming that we mean the same thing, but in fact, boredom can mean really many different things, can't it? And there must be different types of boredom.
Yeah, sure. There are varieties of boredom. One pretty obvious form of boredom is what I call situative boredom, where something specific in a situation or the lack of something specific in a situation is boring. For instance, if one listens to a dreadfully boring, long-winded lecture, I mean, that can be hell on earth. Or if you stay at an airport and your flight is delayed and so on, we all know that. Another form of boredom is what one could perhaps call repetitive boredom, in which something that's really nice in itself gets boring due to the sheer amount of repetition. For instance, eating at, say, Gordon Ramsay's restaurant for a night, I mean, that's wonderful. Eating there 365 days a year would be dreadful.
A vacation on the beach is wonderful for a week, but if you had to do nothing but stay on the beach for a month, you might get bored.
Yeah. And then there's the deep existential boredom where the soul is empty, the world is empty. That's a variety of boredom that's very closely related to depression. And then there's creative boredom, which is not characterized so much by its contents as by the fact that it actually forces you to do something. I guess one could describe my book on boredom as a result of creative boredom.
So it sounds like that's the state we all need to strive for, creative boredom. But that's really a response to boredom, not boredom itself.
Yeah, I had to figure out, because it's a terrible state to be in when it really digs in deep. So we do all sorts of crazy things to try to get out of it.
So how would you describe the feeling of boredom? I mean, we all talk about it, we all think we know what it is, and yet, what is it?
One could perhaps describe it metaphorically as if eternity has entered this world. I mean, you're stuck in a now, an instant, that's empty and seems to have absolutely no end whatsoever. And that would be one way to describe it. Another way to describe boredom would be to say that it's actually a lack of personal meaning. I think that comes close to something, because often one can hear that, well, if you're bored, you haven't got enough to do. I think that's plain wrong. I mean, you can have so much to do, you can work like insane and still be so bored with what you're doing, because you simply find no personal meaning in it. So the question of boredom is a question of meaning, not a question of having much to do or little to do.
Do you think it's our own fault when we're bored? I mean, do you think, is boredom a choice?
Emotions generally seem to be something that happens to us, not something we choose. On the other hand, we are responsible for what sort of situations we place ourselves in. And in that sense, one is also responsible for one's own boredom. The next responsibility is, well, how am I going to relate to this boredom? That's definitely my responsibility. And I think that the worst approach is to make one's entire life a constant flight away from boredom. Because that means letting boredom dictate, in effect, one's entire life. I think that a much better approach is actually to see boredom as some sort of voice of conscience, as an emotion that tells you something about the way you live your life. And if you, in boredom, feel that your life has become almost nothing, maybe that's because you live your life in such a way as a nothing. And maybe that's a wake-up call to take a different approach to what you do in life. And in that sense, I think that Nietzsche is absolutely correct when he says that whoever shields himself completely off from boredom also shields himself completely off from himself. Hmm. I think boredom is actually a source of knowledge of oneself and one's life.
So there are some benefits to boredom. It's not just a very unpleasant state.
Another interesting thing that I discovered is that in research on boredom, a common finding is that men complain a lot more about boredom than women. And I wondered, why on earth should that be the case?
Do men just complain about it more?
Well, I mean, it's hard to distinguish between someone complaining about it and really feeling it, but we can see that definitely more men than women report that boredom is a significant factor in their life. And I thought about it for a while, and what I ended up with might be wrong. It's a really simple solution, because in research on depression, a lot more women than men report being depressed. Mm-hmm. So it might just be that what one gender describes as depression more or less is the same as what the other gender describes as boredom.
It's interesting. We just use different words.
Yeah, that might be the case. It's my most promising hypothesis so far.
I'm wondering if there's, I mean, is there any significance to the fact that we use different words? And what does it say to you that women describe the same state as depression and men describe it as boredom?
It's hard to tell why that should be the case. It might be that men are brought up to a greater extent to be sort of active, constantly engaged in sports and something. And
well, you know what it makes me think is when you complain that you're bored, you're sort of complaining about the world outside. You know, I'm bored,
yeah.
Which says, amuse me, you know, or something outside is not right. But if you say I'm depressed, that's complaining about an internal state. So it sort of suggests men are kind of more likely to blame their unpleasant feelings on something happening outside of them, and women are more likely to blame themselves.
Yeah, that might be the case, yeah. Anyway. I see that.
So if a great deal of our current Western culture involves a flight from boredom with, you know, a constant ramping up of stimulation and novelty in an attempt to escape the feeling of being bored, what would life be like if we turned around instead and embraced boredom? What would that look like? What would we do?
Well, I think boredom is pretty hard to embrace. I think that rather than embrace boredom, I'd say that one should accept boredom. Accept the fact that boredom is a factor in one's life, but it's only one factor among many. And by taking that sort of approach, boredom no longer becomes this big, scary thing that one has to spend one's entire life fleeing away from. But it simply becomes one factor among many others. That doesn't solve the problem of boredom, but it changes the character of the problem, at least.
So in some ways, we simply need to learn to become more resilient.
Yeah, I think so. And I also think that probably one of the worst things one can do when bringing up children is to keep them stimulated at all times. Because I think that if you're going to have a fairly livable life, you have to be able to learn yourself to live with boredom. I'm trying to learn it myself, but I have extremely low thresholds for boredom.
Lars Svensson is the author of A Philosophy of Boredom. He spoke with Anstrain Champs.